Hello, folks. It's our first Phillies Talk podcast in a long time. Hope you missed us, but we're back.
All right, I'm going to hit stream on the live stream. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. I don't know.
And lo and behold, our live stream didn't work, but we're talking Phillies, Matt Klentak, Mr. Andy McPhail, and the World Series, and much more. Here it is, folks.
And welcome aboard this live stream. Hopefully it's live streaming out there. Edition of Phillies Talk Podcast. It's Rich Baxter from Fightin' Phillies, and I'm joined with Mr. Matt Vesey from PhilliesBell.com. How you doing, Matt?
Hey there, Rich. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad for a rainy November 1st. We got the leaves falling off the trees over here, and kind of feels a little bit like that long winter we're looking at.
It's definitely fall here. Fall has fallen upon us. We just fell back the clocks last night, which was Halloween. So I guess it's only going to go downhill from here as far as weather goes.
Yes, indeed. We got the heater going. I got my long sleeve Phillies windbreaker on. I only had this on last night. It went down into the 30s around west of Hamilton, where I was, Hamilton, New Jersey. And man, it was frost on the pumpkin. You could actually see the frost building up on things. It was out at a haunted hayride. But Phillies have a little haunting going on with themselves still. We have Mr. Matt Klentak demoted in the job that he was at. And Phillies are looking for a new GM. Tough situation going on in Philly.
Yeah, it's unusual, that's for sure. And I think the real unusual part, I mean, right now, it's not unusual that they say goodbye to Klentak, which I think a lot of people saw coming when they didn't make the postseason this year. They did slide Ned Rice, who has experience, into the position as an interim general manager. But I think the real surprise is that it doesn't look like they're in any hurry to hire a permanent replacement for Klentak, and that's a little bit surprising. Club president Andy McPhail made a lot of enemies. He already had enemies in the fan base, I would say. He didn't do himself any favors when he misspoke. I think that he was actually being honest the other day when he was talking about the team not being in a rush there. And it seems like McPhail is even ready to go himself. He doesn't seem like he has a lot of enthusiasm for his own job as club president. His actual statement was that if John, meaning John Middleton, thinks that he can land a big fish by moving me aside, getting somebody to become president, that he would happily step aside. And McPhail said that that's been going on for 2 years. He's had that conversation with Middleton over a two-year period. So I really don't see any reason why they should be continuing on with McPhail even. So it seems to me that it's time for an entire new front office here with the Phillies.
And as you said, McPhail saying that he basically would accept a job cut himself this past week, saying if owner John Middleton wanted to get rid of him, so to speak, in quotations, he wouldn't be opposed to that. So like you said, he's like the lame duck that has no real say in the team, possibly, and frustrated maybe in another avenue as well. But Phillies have a lot of house cleaning to do, as you said. There's some candidates that have been bandied about with the GM job, among them former Phillies GM Ruben Amaro, and even going back to Ed Wade. I was surprised to hear those two names being mentioned again, but apparently former GM Ruben Amaro is in running for possibly an Angels job out there.
Yeah, that's what he interviewed for the job. And the Angels have, you know, they've just looking at the public names. There have been like at least a dozen names that the Angels have interviewed. So that really seems to fly in the face of one of Middleton's main arguments for, I apologize, one of McPhail's main arguments for why the Phillies wouldn't be seeking a new GM right away. McPhail said, who would want to move or relocate in the middle of a pandemic? Well, apparently there's at least a dozen, maybe more, people who are willing to move in the middle of a pandemic to go to the Anaheim or the Los Angeles Angels job. So that's just so such a totally ridiculous statement by Middleton when you consider there are only 30 of these jobs available, and there are plenty of assistant GMs and other executives around the game who would love, they would die to have one of these 30 jobs, and that includes the Phillies job. So that was just a complete bogus statement by McPhail, and between that, a statement like that, and the statement of his own seeming disinterest in his own job, I just can't understand why Middleton would keep him on at all at this point.
Yeah, you would think he would pick up on the fact that he's not interested in running the Phillies anymore, it seems, by what he's saying. I'm even more intrigued by Ruben Amaro Jr. He's been a first base coach for the Mets and the Red Sox. He's been out of that role as GM for a long time now, and I'm pretty surprised his name's being offered around as a GM in baseball today. Are you a little surprised at all by that?
No, I guess not. As long as I think it's probably a team like the Angels are doing their due diligence. You know, they're looking at people who've had experience before, people who have experience in a number of facets of the Major League Baseball operation. Amaro certainly has that from, a lifetime in the game. You know, his father was in the game. He was born and raised in the game. He's been a bat boy. He sat in a dugout as a child. He's been a player himself in the minor leagues and the major leagues. He's been a coach, a general manager, assistant GM. So, you know, Ruben Amaro has done it all in this game. So it doesn't surprise me that he would be a candidate. He's only been out a few years. Look what happened with the Chicago White Sox this past week with naming Tony La Russa as their manager, talking about somebody who's been out of it for a long time. So, no, not at all surprising. I think it's really just a question of, was Amaro interested? And somebody, I'm sure they, the Angels probably had a list of, a couple of dozen people that they were interested in and just ticked down their list to see who would be interested in coming to them. Amaro probably said, let me keep my options open, or let me at least, keep it out there that I am interested in these types of jobs. So he had the interview. Now, how interested, is Amaro? How interested are the Angels in him, really? That remains to be seen, but he's certainly a legitimate candidate for any major league job that would come open that he would be interested in. Of course, there are a lot of candidates for this Angels job, and I don't expect Ruben will get it, but you never know. Maybe he had a good interview.
Yeah, and he had played with the Angels during his career as well. And it seems like some of these teams pick up on that as well. They have a relationship possibly down the line with ownership, things like that. But on your website, philliesbell.com, you had an interesting article in the past couple of days here with saying that the Phillies should probably consider a historic choice as their next GM. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Earlier in the week, I wrote about Kim Ng of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Well, now she's with Major League Baseball, and she was a longtime member of the Dodgers organization. She's got tons of experience as far as baseball goes in pretty much every possible way that you could have experience in baseball. This is a woman who began her career back in the early 90s as an intern with the Chicago White Sox. She worked for them full time during the early to mid 90s. She was the assistant director of baseball ops under a former Phillies pitcher, actually, Ron Shore. In 1995, while she was working for the White Sox, she became the first woman to present a salary arbitration case when the White Sox went up against their star pitcher at the time, Alex Fernandez, and she won that arbitration case. She moved on to work for the American League, working in the American League offices. She was the director of waiver and records, which meant she had to approve all the transactions. Any transaction, trades, waiver moves, that type of thing. That led to a role in the late 90s with the Yankees. Brian Cashman hired her to work as his assistant GM. She became the youngest GM in the major leagues. She was only 29 years old at the time. And she was just the second woman to ever be an assistant general manager in the big leagues. And she subsequently won three World Series rings with the Yankees in 98, 99, 2000 when they had their little late 90s, early 2000s dynasty going. She then moved on to the Dodgers. She was a vice president and assistant GM there. She interviewed for their job in 2005 but didn't get the job. However, she stayed on as the assistant to Ned Coletti at that time. Over the years, from the late 2000s, mid to late 2000s, she interviewed for another three or four jobs, all of them on the West Coast. In 2011, she left to go back to the administrative offices in baseball, and this time not just the American League, but all of Major League Baseball. She worked for Joe Torre as the senior vice president of baseball ops. So for the last decade, pretty much, she's been working for Major League Baseball. One of her main responsibilities has been the international game. She's been trying to grow the international game, whether that be in South America or overseas in Europe. So, you know, this is a woman who has been in baseball for the last 30 years. She's been an assistant general manager for two organizations. She's done everything you could possibly do in those positions. She's handled the workload of a general manager in that role. And she's had done everything except have that title so far. It's been long considered that she would probably be the one to break through that glass ceiling, if you will. So she's experienced. She's talented. She's respected in the organization. And I don't see any reason why the Phillies wouldn't pick up the phone right now, call her up, have an interview. I don't see why they would have to wait for somebody else. I don't know. I can't speak for her, but I would imagine that she'd be interested in the job. Like I said, it's one of only 30 jobs that's open and that's available in the industry, and it's one of only a couple that's open right now. So, again, we're back to the idea of it being ridiculous for McPhail to say that, or even imply that somebody wouldn't be interested in, quote, uprooting their lives during a pandemic. I think if he picked up the phone and called Kim, she'd be very interested. So I made the case for her in an article, as you said. It was dated October 28th. If anybody wants to go to philliesbell.com, they can read it. The title of the article is Phillies Should Consider the Historic Choice of Kim Ng as Their Next General Manager. And I think she'd be a great choice, personally.
Yeah, it would be a real eye-opening pick there. But as you said, she has a lot of experience. There's a lot of GMs that are looking for jobs. They were let go from their teams. So it's going to be interesting to see where everybody ends up. Speaking of her experience with the Dodgers, what did you think about that World Series? The Dodgers pulling it out in six games against a feisty Rays team that I think a lot of us were rooting for.
And, you know, I'll admit that I was rooting for the Rays, too. And I'm not one of these people that has a grudge against any particular team other than the Dallas Cowboys, and I'm not really following the NFL this year. But I don't have any problem with the Dodgers. It had been 32 years since they had won a World Series. So know, kudos to their organization and good for their fan base. They've been long suffering. We know what that's like here, you know, from waiting from 1980 to 2008. I consider somebody like my grandfather, who was a big Phillies fan, who started following that the Phillies sometime around 1930. Had to wait until 1980, so that's 50 years. So, you know, waiting 32 years, that's a long time. So congratulations to the Dodgers. But my personal philosophy has always been that I tend to, if the Phillies aren't there, then I root for teams that have never won ever. And the Rays have never won. So I like the way they go about their business as an organization. I respect them. And I was hoping to see them take their first championship. That said, at PhilliesBell.com, in my World Series prediction piece, I predicted the Dodgers in five. And I wrote up that their key performer in this series would be Clayton Kershaw. And I think that came to be. He was magnificent in game one when the series was getting tight. He came up with another fantastic performance in game five. So I think that you know, while he didn't get the MVP, he certainly was a pivotal performer for the Dodgers. And I enjoyed the World Series this year. I was really glad to see the entire postseason play out. The entire – I would have liked to have seen the Phillies in it, of course, but it was just nice to see, quote, normal baseball during the month of October.
Yeah, Corey Seager getting the MVP this year in the World Series, and it was a tough break for the Rays. Somebody has to lose, and as you said, the Dodgers have been waiting a long time. I really thought they won before 1980, or after, rather, sometime within the last 10 years, I would have bet and lost a lot of money that the Dodgers didn't win a World Series ring. It's unbelievable that they've been through so many players and so many millions of dollars. I started thinking they have to be over $1 billion in salary in probably 7 to 8 years paying salaries like they have been. And it hasn't really paid off for them except for this year.
Yeah, they've been very successful, obviously. The Dodgers have been one of the top teams in baseball for well over a decade now. Now they've been to three of the last four World Series, even though this is the first one they won in 32 years. They've been to the playoffs for something like 8 or 9 straight years. They have, I believe this was their 8th straight National League West division championship, and they had maybe like 3 or 4 more if you go back into the mid to late years of the previous decade. Everybody here in Philly will remember that the Phillies played the Dodgers in the league championship series in both 2008 and 2009, beat them in 5 games both times. So the Dodgers have been a model franchise for many years now. You kind of have to kind of give them a nod, you know, and they made the big move this year that kind of put them over the top in that free agent signing of Mookie Betts. Or I'm sorry, it was a trade, actually, to get Mookie Betts, and then they signed him to an extension, a long-term extension. But that move to bring in Mookie Betts proved to be that kind of cherry on the top, with the whipped cream and the cherry on the top of what was already, you know, a tasty sundae that they were delivering to their fans for a long time. And it proved to be that move, that over the top move. And that's what you want when you put out big money on a guy like Mookie Betts. It's what the Phillies hoped to do with Bryce Harper here. And I think the problem, the biggest difference was that the Dodgers were already working with a pennant winning team. They were already working with a perennial winner when they put Mookie Betts on top of it. The Phillies were working with a loser that was close to emerging when they signed Harper to his big deal. And the Phillies really still needed more. There are big differences in the two organizations. But again, kudos to the Dodgers. I enjoyed the World Series, and the Dodgers are pretty well set up. They're not an old team by any means. Kershaw is getting a little bit older, but large percentage of their team, the key performers on their team, other than Kershaw and Justin Turner, they're in their 20s. This is a team that's going to be around.
Yeah, it's going to be contending for a while. Speaking of teams that are not contending, with the Phillies, of course, the emphasis on signing JT Realmuto seemed to disappear with this COVID year. And even the free agents that are available are going to get less money for 21, it's been said. I wonder if that affects a JT Realmuto signing for this year. Does he accept a one-year deal and then hope to, possibly multiply that after next year when things, quote-unquote, get back to normal, hopefully? He's looking at a $200 million contract, some people say, but which team will actually throw that at him this offseason?
I don't know if anybody will. There are a number of problems for the free agents this year. One is the glut in the market. A lot of players are not being tendered contracts. They're being let go by their organizations into free agency. Other players are, they're natural free agents, guys like George Springer, in addition to Realmuto. There are some other big names out there. So it's going to be very interesting. I honestly, God, I couldn't tell you right now. I have no prediction on what's going to happen with Realmuto. I know that McPhail just said yesterday, I believe, that the Phillies are going to take a fourth crack at him. They tried to sign him originally back in 2019 when they had first traded for him. During that year, they tried to sign him to a longer-term extension. Last year, or apologies, earlier this year, they tried to sign him a couple of times, and they just haven't been able to, get that meeting of the minds, find that right deal. And I think all along, Realmuto was ready to go to free agency. There's been a lot of talk that he wants to set the bar for he's the best all-around catcher in baseball right now. He's in his prime, 29 years old. He's not going to, obviously anybody can get hurt at any time, but he's not going to, if he's a normal, natural career progression, and you have to believe he will. He's in tremendous shape. So I believe that you're going to see a guy who's got another good 4 to 5 years as far as being a premium catcher in the big leagues. And even after that, he's probably going to be, again, as long as he stays healthy, he's probably going to be an effective catcher for at least a couple of years after that. He may not be one of the premium offensive catchers in the game at age 35, 36, 37, but he'll certainly be able to catch. He'll certainly probably, as long as he's in great shape, he'll probably still be a really strong defensive catcher. He'll certainly be more experienced, be a leader, be ready to lead a pitching staff. So you're going to get a premium offensive catcher for the next 3, 4, 5 years. And then you're still going to get a guy for a couple of years after that who's worthy of being your starting catcher for a contending team. So, the idea is that we're hearing is that he wants to set that bar for all catchers, to be able to make a higher salary in the game. And as the best in the game, free agent in his prime, you have to believe that that's going to happen. I think that you're going to see, in general, less money spent in the free agent market, even though there, and probably because of there being a glut of free agents available this year. But the top guys like Realmuto, like George Springer, you're going to see those guys get their deals. So will it be the Phillies? That's the $200 million, as you said, $200 million question.
It's a $64 question of the day. Yeah.
Now, I could see the Mets getting involved, which would be bad news for the Phillies. The Mets have a new owner. He's going to want to make a splash. And there's been a lot of talk about how much, how wealthy he is and all. But for me, individual personal wealth doesn't come into it. I mean, that comes into it as far as your ability to be able to buy the team. But every team still has to work within the constraints of the competitive balance tax. So, you know, the Mets are still a big money team. They still have a lot of salary on the books. But, you know, if he decides, you know, that he wants to make a splash, he can get himself, you know, one of the best catchers in the game. So, if, you know, it's just there's a lot of ways that the new Mets ownership could go. But that's one team that I could see taking a look at Real Muto.
Yeah, and the Phillies themselves turned in sort of a dismal year. It was a dismal situation going on in the world and in the baseball world for sure, but they didn't make the playoffs even. So if you're John Middleton, you're sitting back and looking at the next several years. Now you're going to need a GM, may need a president. It's just not conducive to signing JT Realmuto right now, besides the fact that he's the best catcher in baseball, possibly, but he's already splashed out $300+ million over what, a 13-year period for a guy that's been calling for JT Realmuto to be signed. So, Bryce Harper, if you know, if you want to half your salary and let us afford JT Realmuto, maybe that's the way we can do it. But you know, I realize they're both friends and they'd like to stay together, but the Phillies really don't have a good reason to throw that kind of money at Realmuto besides the fact that he's the best catcher. But they're going to be investing $50 or $60 million between two players. I just, over 1 year, I just can't seem to get my head around that. Because you have a lot of other positions to go, starting pitching, so on and so forth. It's just a lot of money to spend.
Well, they do have money coming off the books. You know, keep in mind they have Arrieta coming off the books and a number of other players. They have the money to spend. It's just a question, like you said, of putting together a complete roster, but you have to pay your star players. And if you believe that Realmuto is the best in the game at his position and is going to stay at an elite level for the next 4 or 5 years, then I think that they have to pay him. But like you said, the Phillies are already paying big money for Harper, but that's not really an impediment. You know, $27 million, 27.5 is what Harper's going to make for years to come for the team. You got Zach Wheeler. They're on the hook for 22.5, I believe it is, to him as far as prorated with the signing bonus. McCutcheon's due $20 million for next year, but that's the last year for Kutch. So it's not like, you know, you can take that 1 year hit. Kutch is, you know, like I said, $20 million, but it's only 1 year next year. You got Segura for 14.85. Aaron Nola's 12.25. So I think Kingery's on a very affordable contract. He's not really producing yet for it, but he's on a very affordable contract. So what the Phillies are really looking at right now is for next year. They're looking at five guys who, doing my math now, 50, 70, 84. They got about $97, $98 million tied up in five guys, being Harper and McCutcheon, Wheeler and Nola, and Gene Segura. So you throw on top of that $25 million, I don't know, 4 years. I don't know how many years it would take to keep JT Realmuto, but say you're talking about $25 million, you know, for Realmuto. So now you're up to $120 million, you know, or so for six players, and you got to fill out 20 more players on your roster with another roughly, you got maybe $100 million more. You can do that. It's just a question of being smart with that $80, $90, $100 million. Now, I think the real kicker here, Rich, becomes, do they want to spend that money next year? Do the Phillies feel comfortable enough with their expense situation, with the their revenue situation with the COVID to actually spend the money for 2021. That's up in the air. You know, my own personal opinion is that they're going to take a hit. They took a hit. They took a bath in 2020. They're going to take a bath in 2021 to some extent, I'm sure. But they've been making money hand over fist for years. Middleton got into his small ownership stake of the team back in the mid-90s. 25 years later, he's got almost 50%, almost 48% control of the team that's worth $2 billion. Now, of course, as McPhail said the other day, they don't see, owners don't see that money until they sell. So it's not like you can operate off of that. Well, sure, but you can operate in a loss knowing that that's out there. You can operate in a loss knowing that you had profits in previous years. You can operate on a short-term loss when you know you're going to have profits down the road. And if you're not willing to operate on a loss for a couple of years, knowing that better days are ahead, then get out. Sell the team. Team's valued out there by Forbes, a reasonable entity that does this for that's what they do, you know, for part of their business, Forbes. $2 billion. So you don't feel like taking a loss for a couple of years, as far as I'm concerned, sell the ball club to somebody who will spend the money. So, you know, the Phillies have the money to sign JT Realmuto. There's no question about that. The question is, are they willing to spend the money on JT Realmuto? Or do they think that they can cover the catching position with somebody else less expensive and spread their money out and make a better overall team? And are they even willing to do all that? You know, what are they willing to do financially for 2021 and beyond? So it's going to be very interesting. If I were a betting man, and I'm not at all, but if I were a betting man, I would say that they have to be considered the favorite. Realmuto wants to stay here. He was clearly happy here. He's clearly got a strong relationship with some of the players, especially Harper. I think he wants to be here. I think he hopes that the Phillies make him the kind of offer that he can accept. So it would seem to me like the Phillies would be in the driver's seat, but nothing's guaranteed until they get ink on a contract.
That's true. And as you said, nothing's guaranteed with the 2021 season either for the Phillies or any other MLB team when it comes to having fans back, although we'd like to hope that that happens. We'll take a quick look at the schedule, but before we do that, we want to thank you for tuning in to this podcast. Hit your subscribe. And if you're listening to this on YouTube, please hit like and hit that subscribe button, because eventually I'm going to get this technology down to where we can live stream on different things. So we're going to be doing some more of that for 2021. And go over to the website. You can find my website at www.fightinphillies.com. That's the broadcast home of the Phillies Talk podcast here. And Matt Veazey's site is philliesbell.com. So follow over at both of the sites there. Check it out. Give it a read or two. And Matt, I got the schedule up here for 2021. Just look at it real briefly. I know we'll be talking about it a lot in the off season. But we open up on April Fool's Day at home. First time in a while I can remember them opening on April Fool's Day.
Will they actually open on April Fool's Day, Rich, or is that is it April Fool's, you know, on all of us? I think we'll know, obviously, we'll know long before then, in all likelihood anyway. I'm looking more at, as I always do, spring training. And the first Grapefruit League game is Saturday, February 27th. I actually shared that on at Phillies Bell that time. And appreciate you mentioning the website, but listeners can also follow at Phillies Bell on social media. That's Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And I put up today on our feed that it's 118 days until that first Grapefruit League game. So Most people, you know, like 100 days as the start of a countdown. So we're getting close to starting a countdown towards the Grapefruit League games. And they'll pitchers and catchers report, I believe, about 2 weeks before that even. So, you know, right now we're at just about, you know, 100 days, a little bit more than 100 days before pitchers and catchers are scheduled to report. And as you kind of alluded to there with your April Fool's, you know, commentary, the key word there being scheduled, you know, we're scheduled to report. So hopefully over the course of this winter, we can get a vaccine. We start to get this COVID under control a bit more. And, you know, we get a normal, quote, season in next year.
Absolutely. Fingers crossed for that. And as you said, maybe we'll wait till 100 days, and after that, the 99-day countdown, we'll let some time go by before that. But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting 21. I see the World Series contenders, the Tampa Bay Rays are coming to town in 21, in August 24th, 25th, quick two-game series with them. And, of course, the Dodgers and the Phillies square off every year. So Phillies will be out on the West Coast to play those World Series champion Dodgers the middle of June, 14, 15, and 16. And let's see when the Dodgers will be at Philadelphia. And hopefully some fans will be able to see the games this year. They'll be in Philly August 10th, 11th, 12th. It's for a three-game series there right in the middle of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So it'll be interesting to see them as well as all the other matchups with the league, with the Mets, of course, and their new owner. Any game you're in particular keying in on so far early, Matt?
I'll be honest with you, Rich. I haven't even looked at the schedule. It's, you know, as you said, just so early, you know, way too early. You know, we could take a look later, but we're just getting started with the off season here. And there are literally dozens and dozens of players who are available as free agents. And that's what I'm really going to be looking forward to watching is this off season. You know, players like Real Muto, like George Springer, players like Michael Brantley, and, you know, there's just so many. Trevor Bauer, you know, there are some big names. Edwin Encarnacion, who's an older player now, but, you know, has a big bat. There's, you know, just tons and tons. I mean, you know, I'm looking down the list right now of free agents, and almost every name is, you know, Corey Kluber. I mean, these are guys who, you know, have been stars in recent years, and some of them have physical issues going on, or some of them are, you know, now they're getting into their 30s. But you look at a guy like Roberto Osuna, who is only 25 years old and certainly a talented reliever, but he has problems that we all know about, legal problems, personal problems. It's just going to be very interesting to see how the Phillies and other teams respond to this, you know, major glut of free agent talent that's available out there. I think that's going to be the story over the next – that and COVID, you know, are going to be the stories as far as baseball goes over the next 2-3 months.
Yes, it will. We'll have to watch those stories and, of course, report on them as we find them. And, Matt, it's great, again, to get together with you talking about the Phillies here. It's been a long time. I sort of put the Phillies Talk podcast on the shelf for a while with this COVID and all this other stuff that's been going on in the past 6 weeks or so. But it's great to get back talking Phillies baseball with you, and hopefully we'll see a trouble-free 21 season.
I'm right there with you, Rich. I know that, you know, it's a wait and see, you know, as far as that goes, you know, because we, like I said, we still don't have a vaccine. You know, they're talking about it, you know, coming back a little bit stronger here, which it always does in the fall and the winter, this kind of virus situations. I already got my flu shot. Hope you got your flu shot. And anybody that's listening out there, make sure you go out and get your regular flu shot. But, you know, we got some time to go. And, you know, we all know we got this crazy election, you know, coming up on Tuesday. But, you know, we get past all this. And as far as us baseball fans go, there's going to be a lot of action over the next couple months. I think you're going to see more interesting action this off season than we have in a really long time, Rich, from the top of the market all the way down through to that second and third tier of free agents. And the Phillies, it's going to be really interesting to see which direction they decide to go in dealing with that market. And dealing with somebody like JT Realmuto.
That's true. Have to watch out for that. Well, thanks for listening to this edition of Phillies Talk Podcast. You can find the podcast over at the anchor.fm/ Phillies Talk Podcast right there at that site. And of course, at fightingphillies.com, you can find us at Phillies Bell as well. Matt, you have a great evening. We're going to get to our dinners now, so it's always better to podcast when you're hungry.
I already got it already ready, Rich. I made us a nice meatloaf and all the fixings that go with that, so we're ready to eat up as soon as we get off the air here.
All right, I can smell it cooking from here. You have a good one, and take care, and I'll talk to you again on the next edition of Phillies Talk Podcast.
Take care, Rich.
And thanks for listening to this edition of Phillies Talk Podcast. Be sure to tune in all off-season long here in the remaining months of 2020 and the brand new year 2021. Take care, everyone. Wash up, wear your masks, and stay safe.